Hey, audio listener, you know there's video, right? Now, I get it. Some of you are on the road, so you have to download this, take it with you on a plane. Some of you read through Braille, so this is your only option. But for other people, there are exclusive sketches and visual elements. This is a nightly show over there on YouTube or for Mug Club members. LateralCreditor.com/Mug Club. The show is daily beyond the clips that you just get on YouTube or here on iTunes. It's $99 for the year, $69 annually. You get the mug, you get access to Levin. Some big new names coming, but we can only keep growing and spearheading the movement if you guys sign up. LateralCreditor.com/Mug Club. But I get it. You're an audio-only guy or gal. There is no changing your mind. Enjoy the show.
Lauder with Crowder Studios. Protected exclusively by Walther.
And Betty!
We have a very special show for everyone out there. Today's a little bit different, and we are going to have some announcements regarding Mug Club. While everyone else is kind of shutting down, slowing down, we've been taking the precautions. We're going to do more to serve you, but I don't want to waste time with that right now. We'll have another video on that. Yeah. I wanted to bring on a very special guest. Full disclosure, this is why I brought him on. I know him. I love him as my own personal doctor. Yeah. He's an internist in Las Vegas, Nevada. He's been practicing for 21 years, and he does – I want to make it clear. Well, first off, Dr. Choi, thank you for being here. How would you describe what it is that you do? Because when I went and saw you, you did all kinds of different things, and it was very weird to me that you were a doctor who actually listened.
Well, what I do is what basically other internal medicine doctors do. I'm a doctor for adult and board certified in internal medicine. And so I serve as a primary care doctor for my adult population patients. So with that, I mean, I'm supposed to be a jack of all trades or at least know something about everything.
Right.
And then specialists are the ones who just delve into one or two field of the vast medicine fields. So cardiologists only deal with the heart. I may deal with a little bit of cardiology, but a little bit of kidney and a little bit of everything else.
And Dr. Choi, I'm detecting a little bit of an accent. Is that Polish?
A lot of people think I'm Chinese, but I'm Korean.
So ooh,
I have a small Korean accent. I came to the States when I was 11 or 12, almost 12. So I've been here about over 40 years.
Now, good Korea or bad Korea?
Supposed to be good Korea, so South Korea.
Okay, okay.
Right now, they're the good ones.
Well, you know, ignorant American. So you probably have some unique insight because right now when we're talking about, you know, coronavirus, Wu Flu, all this, it's as much of a cultural and economic, you know, we're seeing a ripple effect as it is just medical. So being from South Korea and obviously a longstanding sort of, I guess, feud, for lack of a better word, with China, do you feel like you have a little bit of a different insight into this?
Well, in some ways, in the sense that I still have some family members in Korea, including my brother, who went back after growing up here. So I've been actually talking with my brother, so I have some idea as to what's been going on in South Korea in relation to COVID-19. And, you know, I think their relationship with China right now is probably a good term, at least related to the virus. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese have released a lot of info on the virus to South Korea, and that's why they were able to make the kits to rapidly test a lot of their population. I'm talking about South Korea, so they got the sequence of the virus from China sometime in first part of January, and that's what they used to actually come up with the kits.
Now, when did we get that in the United States? Do we know when China sent it to us?
They may be working with the U.S. FDA to try to get those kits approved so we can use it here. But that's a hearsay. I'm not sure.
Right. Well, okay, so we'll go back to that with South Korea and the United States and sort of the CDC. I know you and I have talked about that a little bit. But before we get to that, there are kind of two sides here. There's pandemonium, there's panic with some people, and then there are some people who think that there's nothing going on at all. We've maintained that, listen, take the proper precautions, but we don't want to cripple the entire economy.
Yeah.
There's somewhere in the middle. So for people who may not be in the know, as someone who has had to deal with this yourself, how bad is it, the coronavirus? How should people be viewing this right now?
Okay. The coronavirus is a virus, much like the flu, but it is more, it spreads faster. And the mortality from the coronavirus, the novel virus, is higher than a flu, partly because we don't have any vaccine for it and we don't have any treatments because it is so new. But it is, we do need to take this seriously. I mean, this is a national emergency. We do need to take this seriously, but this is not like a nuclear fallout.
Right.
This is not gonna last 5 years, 10 years. We don't need to be panicked. We do not need to hoard toilet papers. You know? We don't need to do that. This is going to pass. This is going to pass, but we just need to actually follow the instructions from the CDC and our government and actually do our part.
Right.
And we can hopefully get through this with the least amount of mortality. And we can only do that if we actually follow the instructions.
Right. Yeah, and speaking of hoarding toilet paper, I'm the worst person for that, because my dog Betty, she eats toilet, that's her thing,
she
loves,
yeah,
toilet paper rolls. I came home yesterday, I'm like, that's Betty, that's my 401k, that's gone completely. She just chews the toilet paper and throws it all around. That's important, but right now obviously people are, there's a difference between the blame game and then finding out how this happened so we can avoid it in the future, because now there's a lot of, you know, sort of Monday morning quarterback. People say, well, we should have known. What do you make of a lot of people right now blaming President Trump and this administration that they haven't handled this properly? That's what they've been trying to claim in the media.
Hindsight is always 20/20, and whether our president could have done a better job or not, I don't know. You know, but the hindsight is 20/20. Right now, what we need to do is actually follow the recommendations that are given to Mr. Trump from his experts, the physicians, right? And right now, the best thing is stay away from each other. Just stay away from each other so that we don't spread it. Hopefully, if we do that, we can actually dramatically curtail the spreading of the virus so that in a month or so, we will still have some cases, but it will be much less.
Right.
If this works, then we can really get it under control. So, I mean, that's the key.
Right. It's about flattening that curve. And I wanted to ask you, going back to that, well, first off, you said novel coronavirus. And I think a lot of people don't know this. You know, I have I clean my wrestling mats. I have a home gym with an industrial cleaner. And it says on there, kills coronavirus. I think some people may be ignorant to that. Like, the coronavirus has been around for a long time. That's why you said novel coronavirus, correct? Can you explain the difference for folks who may not know?
Well, we've had a coronavirus for a long time. But this is a mutated, is a different strain, basically. So we've had the SARS-CoV-1. This is, we call it SARS-CoV-2. So this is a new strain. It's mutated.
Okay.
So we've had a coronavirus for a long time. This just happens to be a different strain, and it is more potent than the SARS. And we know that because it has caused more death, and the spreading is faster, and it spreads a little easier.
Wait, more deadly than SARS?
Like,
we had SARS in the Toronto airport. You know, I was from Canada. The coronavirus is more deadly than that? Because I'd read different mortality rates.
Yeah, right now the mortality rate is, they're saying, as high as like 3%.
Yeah.
So, which is higher, yeah.
Okay.
So.
And that's predominantly, obviously, people who are elderly and people who have pre-existing conditions. They're the ones who should be most concerned.
Exactly. The younger patients... younger patients really have good immune system, and we can fight it off. And almost most of the cases of the COVID-19, the symptoms are very mild for by and large, most people. They get it, it'll be like a flu-like symptoms, and they'll get a little fever, some cough, and then they'll recover.
Right.
It's the elderly patients and the people with immunocompromised states, like diabetics or heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
I am supposed to be a little bit of a higher risk now because I had a heart attack at the beginning of this year. the people with heart disease or cancer, and so on. Those folks are at much higher risk of dying from it. So I saw some statistics the other day, and people over the age of 80, mortality is as high as about 15%.
Right.
And people in their 70s are about 8%. Below that, I mean, the mortality is very low.
Right.
So, yeah, it's predominantly for the elderly folks. So really, they need to be very careful.
Yeah. Let me propose this. This is going to be something where people get really upset. This is just what we've had to handle in the office. Let me explain why I'm saying this here, and you can shoot me down if this is totally out of left field. Here in the office, we've made sure that people are basically quarantining themselves outside of the office, and then we come to the office because we're a small enough company. Mm-hmm. We can keep track of it, except for some older people. And when I say older, I mean like 58. So they're not really at high risk, but we wanted to take precautions, keep them away. And I wanted to do a Corona pact where we all licked a popsicle stick so that we could just get it over with. Yeah. But no one else would sign. Apparently my lawyers, that's a liability. So, but here, in looking at that, here's my question. We're talking about quarantining the whole country. What about just quarantining old people? And people who are sick, because, you know, I'm reading in the UK, they want the herd immunity, where they want it to get to 60% of the population. And obviously that's an asshole thing to do if you allow that to happen and old people who are at high risk are exposed. But it seems to me that maybe instead of quarantining the whole country, if we quarantined people who are most at risk, let the virus run its course so people are no longer carriers, and then let them out of their cages, that maybe that would be a better
approach. That's a good way to frame it.
This is just a layman. I'm not a doctor. What do you think?
No, I'm just kidding.
What is this, a South Korean Yosemite Sam? Oh, what is he doing? Does that, come on, I mean, no, nothing, there's nothing to that? I'm not saying kill them. I'm saying just keep them safe because otherwise they're going to constantly be exposed to this virus until we get a vaccine, right? For them, it's still obviously less risky, but it's not any less dangerous if they contract it 4, 5, 6 months from now. That's the concern, not so much for young people carrying it. So just quarantine, old people, no?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting idea. But part of the problem is we don't know how long it's going to take if we take this approach to get 60% of the general population, young people, to actually get infected and recover from it. Is it going to take 6 months? Is it going to take 3 months, 6 months, or a year?
Right.
So from the logistics standpoint, how do we quarantine somebody for 6 months or a year, right?
Yeah.
That's one thing. And then two, we still have young people who can die from this.
Right.
And do we really want to run that risk? I mean, so is it kind of ethical? So we're probably going to try to take the approach where we're going to try to minimize the spreading of the virus and let it kind of die off.
Well, they're doing that, but there's talk of... We didn't bring on Dr. Choi Vorkian, okay? We understand. Yes, but we're looking right now at trying to stop the spread, and then the talk is, if it doesn't work, full quarantine. And so I'm saying before that, quarantine most at risk if we're going to go that route. And again, some of this is hearsay, but I mean, that's pretty scary to a lot of us. And I know, you probably have some more insight on this. When people point to South Korea as being successful, you and I have spoken about this. It's a very different culture, and the kind of approach in South Korea are not measures that necessarily would be acceptable to Americans or work. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah, I mean, you remember, Korea is a very small country and is very centralized government. So, I mean, they can mobilize much faster than we can in some ways. Mm-hmm. And the people are very densely populated. And this is why the using the masks and so on worked. It was probably necessary for them. Mm-hmm. Because they're in a crowded place and they're always going to be in contact with somebody. But for us, maybe like in somewhere like in New York, perhaps, that might be an issue. But like in Vegas, where I'm at, the density here is very low, so we could actually stay away from each other much easier than people in South Korea. So we don't really need a mask here.
Right.
We don't really need a mask, at least not right now, because we can't get the virus just standing out here, and it doesn't exist in the air by itself. It has to be transmitted from another person to the next person.
Now, see, I think this is important. This is why I wanted to have you on. There are conflicting reports where some places say it is airborne, and then some places say it's only transmitted through contact. So it is only through some kind of contact or sort of contact by proxy?
Well, contact, mainly what we're thinking is that It is by contact. Like if we shake the hands of another person who has a virus, or if we actually touch the surfaces soon after somebody who has a virus touches a surface, and then we touch our face with it.
Right.
Because it enters through our eyes, our nose, our mouth. So it's a respiratory virus. But we can also get it. It can be airborne. It's typically not, it can be airborne or droplet. So if somebody coughs at us, and then we can actually inhale that, and we can get the virus infection.
Oh. Okay.
Or, right. So the person who has a virus has to be in close proximity and cough.
Okay.
And then we can actually cough up the virus, and then we can actually inhale that.
So if that's airborne, that's pretty temporary. It would actually have to be like you're talking about, basically a fine mist. In other words, it's not necessarily airborne just because someone was breathing there 20 minutes ago.
No. And it does become airborne. It does become airborne in the cases where, like in the hospital, if somebody has the virus, and if you use like nebulizers, or if you're like suctioning the airway, that can actually make it airborne. But it doesn't last very long. I mean, it's not going to be in the air for a long time.
Okay.
It's going to die off. So you have to come in contact with somebody for a significant amount of time in order to actually inhale
now,
and get the virus.
What about you being a doctor? Do you wear, I notice you're not wearing, you don't look like Bane right now. I notice that you're just yourself. Do you wear a mask right now all the time when people come in or a respirator?
No, absolutely not. No.
Okay. Well, you seem pretty bold with that. I would be scared. Why not?
Why not? Well, at least in Nevada right now, even in the hospitals, we're not routinely putting on masks. Okay. We've actually locked down the hospital, so there are no visitors coming in, and then even the staff, everybody is screened with questions and to see if they have fever or symptoms. And if they're dealing with a patient, remember, I'm sitting here, and I'm not being exposed to anybody right now.
Right.
So there's absolutely no reason for me to wear the mask. It is not going to accomplish anything. Because there is no coronavirus in the air right now.
Right.
It's only if I'm in the close vicinity with a patient who actually has symptoms or who actually has an infection. So if I'm actually treating a patient who has symptoms of potential coronavirus, then I will actually put my N95 mask on. I'll put my gown and gloves on.
Okay.
But otherwise, I'm not putting any personal protective gears or PPEs, equipments.
Right. And what kind
of that is the CDC recommendation. CDC recommendation is that general public does not need to wear the mask, at least not yet. And the healthcare workers, we do need to wear it if we're dealing with the patients with the COVID-19 or suspected patients.
Right. But it seems I've also read that really the reason they're telling people not to wear these masks is more so because of the shortage, that they're still if you have them, that it's not a bad idea to wear them. But specifically, if you have the virus, that you should wear the mask yourself. And then if you don't and you're around people who do, that's where you want the N95 respirator. That's about
correct.
Right. OK. All right. All right. Yeah, sorry, that wasn't really much of a question in there. That was my fault as an interviewer, not yours as a doctor. You can diagnose me as a prick.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay. But it sounds like you just need to be safe and protect yourself, which, hey, Dr. Choi, are you protected online? Do you protect yourself online? Because the good news is ExpressVPN anonymizes everything that you do. They encrypt 100% of your data. They were voted the number one VPN on the market by Radar, Wire, and The Verge. And they haven't had any break-ins like data breaches like other VPNs out there. And people watching right now can go to expressvpn.com/Crowder to get an extra 3 months free. So, Dr. Choi, if you're not protected online, that's expressvpn.com/Crowder for an extra 3 months free. And you can use it on all your devices so that people don't know what you're looking up. You know that you're South Korean, your mistrust of the Chinese government, they could be keeping watchful eye on you. They're none the wiser if you use ExpressVPN. Let me ask you again about South Korea. Do you think that also, I mean, we're kind of joking about this, but their somewhat mistrust of China, having worked with them for such a long time, helped them get ahead of the curve because they were skeptical or in looking at the information presented to them. Whereas here, we'll get into it, the CDC in China has been a nightmare as far as the false info.
I think they do have a little healthy skepticism. The Korea mobilized really quickly and early on, and it's just massively tested a lot of people. And they were tracking every case to see, like, the, for instance, within 24 hours, like about 4 hours to 24 hours, they'll get the result. Mm-hmm. And if somebody does have COVID-19, they will actually track, use all means to track where the person actually went to. So they'll look at their credit card spending. They look at GPS systems to see where that patient went to, and then actually let the public have that info so that the people can avoid where the patient went to. So they apparently they use that system rather nicely to slow down the spreading of the virus rather than massively quarantining everybody.
So effectively, the South Korean government doxed its citizens, yeah, and that's yes, that might be something that Americans aren't super comfortable with, right?
Correct.
If the American, so in other words, when people say, look at South Korea and the failure, and this was the question I was getting to, well, why did it take this much longer? People are saying we're more inefficient here in the United States. I think the answer to the question is, to all Americans out there mm-hmm. watching, are you comfortable with the government tracking you using GPS and mm-hmm. releasing that data to the public, because that's how South Korea got ahead of it? Oh, look, you're a busy man. You're on your phone. Is that what you're doing? Have I bored you this much, Dr. Choi? I get that I'm just a basic Caucasian here, but come on.
You're the most boring person I know.
I go in, he says, how do you have a show? This is literally your host. So that is the answer. They literally were tracking and then releasing that information to the public to have those kinds of results here, which would be harder because it's much bigger. Yeah. The United States government would have to do that with its citizens.
Well, plus it's a much, much bigger country, and we're much bigger. This is geographically, we're much bigger, and we're also a very diverse population. Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't, it's not going to apply. What they've done over there, it just doesn't apply here.
Let me ask you this. You were talking about, you know, when we were talking about people sort of blaming Donald Trump, and you said, well, no, really, the CDC doesn't have a whole lot to do with President Trump. The CDC also wanted to, correct me if I'm wrong, go into China and offer help a while ago and were denied.
Correct. That's that was the information I had. It's a closed society, China, right?
Right.
So they probably just don't want to accept help from Western country.
Right. And what we've been told in the media is you know, that President Trump told the CDC not to prepare. Now, as someone who's, is that true? Is there any truth to that?
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand why anybody would tell the CDC not to prepare. That's a...
Right. Yeah, well,
that would be awfully unusual.
Yes, it would be awfully unusual. And typically speaking, the CDC doesn't really have a whole lot to do directly with the president in that capacity. I know they mentioned the pandemic task force or team, and the guy who was there said, no, that's actually not true. We weren't disbanded at all. We were streamlined. And this is, I guess, a question. As someone who works in medicine, right, and we've seen this with psychology, psychiatry, a lot of Americans, and we see it now with the media, a lot of Americans don't necessarily have the greatest amount of faith in their institutions. And we've seen, for example, the FBI and the DOJ, they can be politicized. Is that also possible with agencies like the CDC, because we see, or the World Health Organization? Do sometimes these different organizations have different political agendas where it makes it hard to sift fact from fiction?
I'm sure every organization, whatever field it is they're in, probably does have some, they can be influenced to an extent by politics, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure that's just the way it is.
Right.
But I would imagine organization like CDC would be much more driven by scientific data and for the public good.
Yeah.
And CDC has been sending, you know, I do get a regular update from CDC mm-hmm. On a regular basis about the COVID-19 and what we're supposed to do. So, I mean, it's not like they haven't done anything. They have been doing things. Initially, we didn't have all the proper information from China. Okay. And so we thought this wasn't a huge deal. And then later on, you know, we thought, oh, you know, it's spreading in South Korea and Italy and Europe. And we started getting more concerned. But we still didn't have a lot of cases here. And as far as we know, really no death until I believe beginning recently, and that's when we started. Okay, you know, it's actually spreading here too, and right. That's when we start getting much more concerned.
Right, and so I think this is important to note. A lot of people think that the United States is unique. We are unique in a way that you've sort of drawn attention to. We're large. We're very diverse compared to a lot of other countries, but we're not unique in that up until more recently. Globally, this wasn't seen as a big concern based on the information that we were getting from China. Everyone was kind of in that boat until not too long ago.
The World Health Organization declared a pandemic on, I believe, the 12th, March 12th, wasn't right. it? 11th or 12th? 12th. So, you know, that's I think that's when we really start getting concerned. And the schools were shutting down. And Nevada is on a basically a kind of locked down at this point. All the non-essential businesses have closed as of yesterday, and all the casinos have closed. So only the essential businesses have stayed open, such as medical practices and the gas stations and the food places where they, you know, like the supermarkets
right.
and so on.
What about weed and hookers in Nevada? Are they still in business? Is that
business
considered
is
essential?
Booming, man, still going.
I guess that's been around since the humanity.
It's the beginning of history.
Yeah, but it's not
human history.
It's not taxed everywhere, so I don't know if they're open. You know, you have drive-through dispensaries there in Nevada. I think that sort of answers my next question then, because it matters to get to the root cause of why did people not think this was. And honestly, it doesn't. Like you said, this isn't the kind of pandemic that is going to kill 20% of the population, like people have misreported initially. But the reason that people didn't take it as seriously as maybe it has ended up being is because of the information we were having.
You know, according to the Dr. Leung, who was actually the epidemiologist who dealt with the SARS in Hong Kong, and he said that with this COVID-19, the mortality can be as high as 40%, and 60% of the world population in the worst scenario, 60% of the world population can be infected, and of those 40%, mortality can be up to 40%. That's wow. the worst scenario. But you know, we also know from what the South Korea has done, and also what China has done, it can be contained, it can be controlled, and we can actually get through this without that kind of devastating number. Mm-hmm. And this is why the U.S. is now taking the this is a drastic measure where we're actually trying to do lockdowns and have the people not come in contact with each other for about a month to try to avoid that kind of potentially having that kind of a pandemic.
Right.
Right, and I don't think we're going to have that because we are already taking measures. We're taking right. measures, so I seriously doubt we're going to have anything close to that. Okay, so we don't need to be panicked. We don't need to be panicked.
Right.
The best thing we could do is simple measures such as washing our hands very frequently and don't touch our nose, don't touch our face without washing.
Right.
And wash our cell phones frequently throughout the day. And if you're out, try not to touch public places, and just try not to go out if we can for a while until we get this under control.
Right.
But I really doubt we're going to have a 60% of a U.S. population infected. I really doubt we're going to have 40% of those dying. We're just probably not going to see that.
No,
we're
of course not.
On this.
But that
we're
does sound like, from what you're saying, that means that playing a good old game of head and shoulders, knees and toes, eyes, ears, mouth, and
correct.
Nose is out. Mm-hmm. That should be none of that. Let me.
Dang.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you're killer at that game. I mean, it's not even a game. I thought it was a limerick. Yeah. But as a practitioner, how urgent is it for you to get the testing kits? Because that seems to be the focus in the media right now. Is, well, we don't have enough testing. Sounds to me like maybe you're saying that's not as necessary as taking these precautions and these measures, or have you been disappointed in the lack of testing kits available? Why don't we have testing kits? It sounds like we've sort of answered it by the root cause of not having the right information, but as a practitioner, what's your point of view on that?
I do have some testing kits now.
Okay.
I do have some testing kits. Initially, we were rationed about five last week, but we now actually have probably about 20, 30 of them.
Oh, wow, that's a big increase. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think a lot of people, mm-hmm. Dr. Choi, yeah. don't skim past that. Don't play coy. Most people think that there are no testing kits available. That's a fourfold increase.
There are testing kits. There are testing kits. And the hospitals are testing. And so we're going to have mobile testing places, apparently, where we're going to be able to test people as they drive through, just like they did in South Korea. So,
right.
So we're going to have those. So we will have more kits. So it's coming, but we still need to try to slow down the spreading by staying away from each other.
I get it. We can't be touching our faces. I understand this, Dr. Yes. Choi. I get it. I didn't know you were a pediatrician, but this is so you're like a taco truck, but for coronavirus testing kits.
Correct.
Okay, good.
They're actually going to implement mobile units, apparently, or something.
Do you know why you went from 5 to 30? Is a big part of that because they've been recruiting sort of private laboratories now, too, to assist in creating more testing kits?
Correct. So the big private labs like the Quest LabCorp, they have the capability of doing the tests. And now the... they've had approval from the, I think, FDA or CDC clearance to use more of the regular swabs to test.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's why now we have more kits.
Now, why was that not approved before? What's the difference between the regular swabs and the other swabs?
Well, I think they just didn't know if it was going to work. And so they probably had to test it.
Okay.
So yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of red tape there, and it seems like this is a good thing, though, that at this point, had we relied only on the federal government, we wouldn't be able to get as many kits this quickly. So having private laboratories work in tandem with them seems like, I mean, you went from 5 to 30. That's a huge bump.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So that's good. So there's a silver lining there. And I do, you know, I want to ask you about your health, but speaking of which, I see that you're drinking coffee, but I don't think you're drinking the right coffee. We're going to send you some with Black Rifle Coffee. You know, They're veteran owned, and they fresh roast it, ship it to your door. They're huge. They have the balls to sponsor this show.
They do.
And they're offering a discount right now. If people go to blackriflecoffee.com/Crowder, use the promo code Crowder. They get 20% off their first purchase. I'm a big coffee snob, Dr. Choi, and I don't like what I'm hearing about what you're drinking there at the office. That to me is more concerning than Corona. Yeah.
It's not cool.
Sorry.
Yeah, bad coffee will kill, right?
Yes. Yes, it happens. Well, there's mold. There's mitotoxins. I know. I read Dave Asprey. I know what I'm talking about. Are you a medium roast or a dark roast guy?
Duck roast. Dark roast.
It sounded like you said duck roast.
Duck. Ooh.
No. All right. Okay.
This is my accent.
Yeah. Have a little. So you've been in the United States for how long?
43 years.
That explains it. The accent only goes away at 44. 44 years. Yeah. You're just under the cutoff.
One more year.
You and when that
just
happens, let my French Canadian mom know because she still hasn't figured that out either. But Dr. Choi, you mentioned this sort of nonchalantly that you had a heart attack. That was a big surprise to me when you told me that, and I think it's a big surprise to people watching. I mean, you're a trim guy. I've always known you to stay healthy. And you eat pretty well, and you certainly have helped me. How did that happen? A relatively young, fit, healthy guy have a heart attack?
Well, doctor, heal thyself. I guess I had a high cholesterol, and I thought I could control it with a diet and exercise, which I've been doing. And obviously not. That's one. And then two, you know, my job is very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And then three, there's a family history of early onset heart disease, and I kind of ignore that, I guess. So a combination of all of those probably led to the early heart attack.
And do you think you maybe ignored it because you felt so good and you were kind of fit and spry? You thought, like, I'll be fine.
Correct, because I've been eating healthy, and I've been exercising with a trainer for a long time, many years. And, you know, I run on the treadmill. I don't have chest pains, and I go, okay. So I thought I was okay. Obviously not.
Well, you know what? That brings me to an interesting point, and I think it may also relate to this, you know, the COVID-19. But how important are genetics in health? I think often we overlook that. First, let's start with that. Genetics, how important is that? Because that seems to be the sort of new frontier with health. Genetic testing. Mm-hmm. Now they're even talking about gene doping, which I don't understand. But
I mean, genetic testing is it is important that that's kind of the direction a lot of the new technology is going to try to figure out which medication actually works better for this particular individual based on their genetic disposition. So that we've been doing a study on that for quite some time, and there are companies out there who are testing to see which medication I should be giving each individual, because you know there are like maybe 10 different medications for one condition, and they may not be all equally effective for a particular individual.
Right.
Or some of those medications may cause more side effects on a particular individual, and we are actually trying to figure out how to test,
right,
do a genetic testing to apply to that. But you know, we're still not there, in my opinion. But it's getting, you know, it's getting more accurate.
And my second question is, because you said you have a stressful job, how much of an impact does a lot of people think about diet and exercise? How much of a physical impact? Because stress isn't seen as a physical thing, right? You get in the gym, you get in the treadmill, people go, okay, I'm physically moving, or I'm physically moving this way to bench press, or I'm physically putting this food in my mouth. Stress is sort of conceptual for a lot of people. How much of a physical impact does stress actually have on one's health?
Because of stress, we know that it will decrease the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
Stress will decrease the immune system. So obviously, if your immune system is lower, then you're more likely to catch the virus. Not just coronavirus, but any other virus, right?
Right,
any other infections.
Yeah, but this podcast will be titled about coronas because that's what sells. So that's what we're talking. That's what we talk about. Who cares about the old normal flu? So that's something that's known, right, in the medical field. I mean, that's a physical observation. Stress lowers immunity that can be quantified.
Yes.
And I guess what other, in closing here, what other tips would you give if you had to tell, we get it, wash your hands, social distancing, but is there anything else that you think maybe some people can take as extra steps or they're missing, either whether it's lowering stress, whether, are there any supplements or anything that you think might be not, we're not saying any of this is a cure, but is there anything that you would also advise on top as supplementary measures for people to take precautions?
There are some data or suggestion that the zinc may help. There are some studies that were done where the zinc has shown to slow down the replication of the RNA from the virus,
okay,
intracellular replication. So the zinc potentially may help, but there's no absolute data that says it does for
right.
the COVID-19. But generally speaking, you know, it may help. So
sure.
It's not going to hurt to take some zinc supplement.
Okay.
And there was some initial data that some antiretroviral medication, HIV medications, were used with some success in treating the patients, but that's in the hospital.
Right.
Or anti-malarial medications such as Plaquenil, which is hydroxychloroquine. They've also used that in South Korea and in China to treat the severe cases.
Well, I just read about that today, and that's relatively new. How does that work? Like you're saying, this anti-malaria medication, because it seems like there's a lot of promise there, and it's a little weird to me that they've been using it for a while overseas, and it hasn't really been discussed until this current 24-hour news cycle.
There's some mechanism, apparently the chloroquine or the hydroxychloroquine may assist in the transport of the zinc from extracellular to intracellular where it is needed to stop the replication of the virus.
Hmm.
But that might be the mechanism.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure.
Right.
But that's that may be the mechanism.
But they have been using it to some degree of success.
Correct.
Wow. Yes.
At least the report from South Korea and the China. Uh-huh.
Well, I trust the report more from South Korea than China. If it was only coming from China, I'd be like, I don't know. South Korea, you know, guys make good phones. You know, I've never had Korean food that I didn't like. You know, the Samsung Galaxy 7 exploding in people's faces. You have to admit, that's one for you guys. That was a little bit of a mess up. But aside from that, we've had a pretty good relationship with them. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cho. I know that you are a busy man and you have a lot of patients to get to. So please do take all precautions that you can to stay safe. I know I'm saying this. You're the doctor. You know, if there's anything that that happens that's new that you think the public should really know about, please do let me know or let them know, because people are desperate for information out there right now. And they're looking
right.
for non-politically charged sources to give us the straight story. And I think that's very hard to come by right now, unfortunately. All right.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. Sometimes he's a man of few words, and then sometimes he's a man of intense mockery. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
He finds the words when he's mocking me. For everyone watching right now, we really appreciate you taking the time. And we'll have some big announcements here coming from Mug Club and the kind of content that we'll be doing for everyone out there. When everyone else is stepping back, I think we're going to be stepping up and trying to make it worth your while, because we know that a lot of you are lonely out there, and we want to help with that as much as we can. Thank you so much, Dr. Choi. Everyone else, we'll see you next week.